It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Untouchable. Seriously, we dare you to try and touch him. Bob McCowan at Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And final hour of the program is set to go. It's Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. It is Canada's most listened to sports talk show. Bob McCown, Ken Reid, right there on the Sportsnet family of networks. A little bit later on, Chris Knobloch will join us. He's the head coach of the Erie Otters as they've been motoring through the playoffs so far, dispensing of the London Knights. Had to think for a second. In four straight, who some people thought might be a troublesome opponent for Erie.
I thought they would be more troublesome than
four they didn't
straight.
Seem to be at all troublesome.
No, so not we'll young Mr. McDavid.
We'll talk to him about that in just a moment. But first, always our pleasure to welcome the president of basketball operations and managing general of the Toronto Raptors. Here is Masai Ujiri.
Hey,
how
Bob.
Are you?
How are you, man?
Kicking ass, taking names.
As usual.
As usual. So, a year ago at this time, our friend Masai stood up in front of a bunch of gathered folks outside the Air Canada Centre and uttered the phrase that I can't use on the radio, which essentially was, bleep Brooklyn. What's your follow-up? What do you got planned for this one?
Nothing for now, you know, like, just excited to play, honestly, Bob, nothing planned at all, you know, like, we're excited about, the matchup and jumping into it, into the playoffs starting Saturday.
You don't control who you play, in essence. Could you, I suppose, theoretically you could, but I always have a difficult time understanding whether teams really can try and win and lose games late in the season in order to get a matchup. But tell me what it is about Washington that has allowed you guys to have the success you've had against them.
I don't know, you know, I'm sure it's a matchup game, you know, like I'm sure. But there are just some teams like that, right? You know,
of course.
Like, I can't honestly put a finger on it. It's almost like how Charlotte, you know, like wow with us, you know. But honestly, Bob, when the playoffs comes, that's all thrown out of the window. You know, like that's it's a whole different ball game, whole different season. The intensity is incredible. Teams can prepare. You know, when you play them in the regular season, you beat them or they beat you, or the next day it's another team, you know, like and another team. So it's not, this is 5, 6, 7 games just planning and strategizing and doing all kinds of stuff, you know, like preparing for just one team alone. So I think all that is out of the window and, you know, onto the playoffs now, and we'll see how we do with them. The 4-5 matchup is always a tough one. I think it's always the toughest one because it seems to me, you know, like that the 4 and 5 will be as closely matched as any of the other series.
Popular wisdom suggests in any playoff series, in any sport, defense matters more than offense. Whether it's baseball, you got to have pitching if you're going to succeed in the postseason. If it's hockey, you got to have goaltending. And if it's basketball, you got to play good defense. The one thing your coach has been preaching for 82 games, well, longer than that since he's been here, has been defense. And this team has only intermittently responded to that. How comfortable do you feel about this team's ability to ramp up the defense? Or do you not buy into that theory at all?
I feel comfortable with them. I buy into the theory. You have to defend to win in the playoffs. And I think our style of play, we kind of went away from it a little bit. But I just think, you know, like the swing of the season, you know, like I think the little adversity we went through, I think many things, you know, combined brought about, you know, like I don't want to say lackadaisical, but sometimes not very good defending. But these guys have, they kind of turned it back on now, and it's not the best way to go about things, you know, like, but for us, it's the only way to go about things right now, you know, like we have to figure it, we had to figure it out quickly. I think they've tried to. While jumping in there, you're going to have to defend those teams. They have, this Washington team is pretty good offensive players, an all-star, you know, like a couple ex-all-stars. In my opinion, you know, this is a good test for us. But we're ready, you know, like these guys are fearless, and everybody, Bob, in the end has to play hard and has to defend in the playoffs, you know, like, and so the game slows down a little bit, you know, and it's a grind, and we have to be ready. We have to be ready for that.
Masai, are you excited to get another shot at Paul Pierce, who stirred it up a bit this week?
Hey, I don't know, you know, like, he went after quite a few people in that article. I didn't even get to the part where he went after Toronto, went after us, you know, like, it was so much, one person after the other. So, boy, he was angry, you know, like, but you know what? We don't care here, you know, like, it's come to that point, honestly, and, Bob, we don't fear anybody anymore. Basketball has passed that a little bit, you know, like, we don't fear anybody here, you know, like, and we don't care, you know, you come in, I don't know what he meant by it, you know, whatever it is, you know, like, hey, I'm sure he has it, you know, like, hey, we're right here, you know, like, we'll be waiting, you know, and hopefully, you know, like, our guys will be ready, and I know they're ready to compete and get on with the series.
Now, if you guys don't want to express your displeasure with Mr. Pierce, I know DeMar DeRozan kind of just said, you know, Pierce always has something to say. I'm thinking that whole We the North, that little group that gathers at the ACC, they might have something to say to Mr. Pierce. What do you expect fan reaction to be for Paul Pierce when he steps onto the floor?
He knows he's coming, you know, like, we didn't need to be woken up in that aspect with our fans and, you know, like with the following and Jurassic Park and all that stuff, you know, like that doesn't need any outing. But now, you know, it's going to be crazy out there, you know, and those are our fans and supporters. And, you know, he called out Toronto in general. So, you know, you deal with Toronto.
I know Bob mentioned if you had an encore for what you said last year about Brooklyn, but do you plan on going out and addressing the fans again? And if so, why is that important for you to step out in front of your fan base like that?
It's really important, you know, like I honestly have nothing planned or anything, you know, like, but just to acknowledge, you know, and we with the team, again, we say, you know, last year I think we're underdogs in some kind of way, and then this year you come in, you have expectations. Like, I honestly say, you know, like, we're proud of the team, you know, like, but we're proud of our fans, you know, like, and we have to learn to win. We have to learn to win as a team, as a city, as a country. Our sports teams, you know, like, we have to keep growing and learning how to win and the grind. And for me to face that expectations and the way these guys have reacted, yes, we went through a little adversity here and there in the season, but come out one win better than last year, you know, like, I want to say we're trending in the right way, and you just hope this is the new normal for us, that we can keep building and growing. And yes, if the expectation is playoffs or bigger than that, we can keep trending in the right way.
With Masai Ujiri, the president and general manager of the Toronto Raptors. I know you won't give too much away, but one of the great concerns that all franchises have as they get to this time of year is health. And it is particularly important, of course, in basketball, where only five guys are on the court at a time. And if one of your key guys is gone, that's a quarter of your, or no, 20% of your roster. We know that, you know, Kyle's had back issues. We know DeMar appears to be perfectly healthy now. Amir played the other night, but he's had some injuries. How would you classify the team's health?
You know what? Well, kept our fingers crossed. You know, like DeMar rested and got back into the groove yesterday. Kyle has taken time to come back, and you know he's played, got a few games under his belt. You know, like and you're going to get the occasional soreness here and there. You know, like these guys are going to be beat up. It's just like every other team too. And then Amir, you know, we all know, you know, like, he's got a couple minutes and games under his belt. So I think, you know, keeping fingers crossed, Bob, you know, like, whereas if you are going into the playoffs the way we are today, you know, like, maybe, you know, like, it's good to say that we can't ask for anything better, you know, like, and hope that, you know, like, when things continue trending the right way with our health. And here's another couple more days, you know, like, and not playing games and ready to go on Saturday.
Well, nobody's missing, but there's some concern about, you know, what kind of percentage can you expect from Amir and even Kyle. You know, even though he's played the last few games and has looked fine and had played a lot of minutes, too. You know, are you at all concerned about the persistence of their existing conditions?
No, I'm not. You know, like I go by our medical and take, you know, like all the advice and whatever, however direction they get us to go. And honestly, at this time, we're keeping our fingers crossed, but if there's any way we can ask for anything to be good going into the these guys are not all going to be like 100%. They know how to fight it out and play. You know, Kyle, he's going to go out there and do his best, and so is Amir. So, well, as good as they're possibly going to be able to get, you know, like, and we just hope for the best.
DeMar and Kyle, they both finished in the top 30 in the league in drives per game. When you guys go to the line, you have success. Does that become more difficult for players like that to play that style of game in the playoffs, or do you have to depend on them playing that style of game in the playoffs?
You know, it's a great question again, and we are relentless. I think they said we're second in the NBA in also, you know, like a free throw percentage and a free throw shooting. So it's a good thing for us because Lou doesn't get to the hole as much, but he gets fouled a lot. Kyle can get to the basket DeMar. And Jonas, as a big guy, he shoots the free throws pretty well. But yeah, we want to attack, you know, like they say sometimes in the playoffs, you know, like the basket gets a little bit smaller. It's almost like you can't rely on jump shooting. You have to pound it a little bit and attack it a little bit. So getting to the free throw line is a strength of a few of our guys, and I think it's going to come into use in the playoffs.
With Masai Ujiri, take us inside your office, or not just us, but the audience a little bit inside the office. So you played 82 games. You're constantly assessing your talent. You're deciding, you know, who you like, who you may want to move, what other pieces you think you need, how you might think those things could fit long term during the off season. What does performance in the postseason mean? How might that influence decisions that you may be on the verge of making?
I think it does, you know, like in terms of, you know, like you can look at it both ways, you know, like you can say in terms of addition and in terms of subtraction. We try to figure out as a team our core, you know, like going forward, you know, like and some of the players, you just want to keep giving that opportunity and that platform to grow. And that's what we've done. We didn't make any trades. And it makes you assess your team better. But as you look at it, the playoffs, without any doubt, you know, I'm not going to sit here and BS anybody that, you know, like you want players to, you know, not necessarily like prove themselves, but, you know, like show that that trend that you're moving the right way, you're moving forward, you know, like in progress, in playing, in contributing, I think is huge, huge for us. We'll continue to do that. We also know that players sometimes struggle. Sometimes it takes some players a longer time. But, you know, we have to keep studying. You know, like I use all the analytics, I use all the numbers, I use all the everything we see physically. You know, like study these players mentally, how they perform, you know, like under pressure. Our guys, they're really training the right way, in my opinion. But we'll evaluate this and see what additions, you know, like we can make and how we continue to build our team. But we're not going to label failure and success. You know, like I think that's however we do in the playoffs, we're not going to do that. You know, like we're going to continue to just figure out how to grow and keep building. You know, like because these are the same guys. Won 48 games last year, you know, won the division. Same guys that did the same thing this year. See if we can do a little bit better and continue to grow there and see what additions you need to make to your team or adjustments you need to make to your team to keep growing.
If anybody that's got kids understands this, and I still have kids in school, believe it or not, you know, I understand how marks work. So, you know, you get a report card and some percentage, 50% or whatever of your mark will come from the tests and things you've done in the classroom over the course of the year, and the other 50% will come from the exams that you've taken. Do you kind of equate it the same way as you're trying to assess, is the 82-game performance more important than the 6 or 7-game performance, or is it vice versa?
I think it balances out, Bob. It honestly does, and it's a good way for you to actually like put it. But I think, you know, the regular season, the playoffs is what you want to play for. You know, like at the end of the day, we're playing for a championship here in terms of where we want to be. You know, like it's not just appearing in the playoffs. So you want to continue to build. So when you're playing these games, you're going to assess your team and see, you know, like some of the needs that you're going to have, some of the things that, and that might be by subtraction, you know, like it's in some ways, you know, like last year we had to give up a player in terms of a trade to get a scorer off the bench, a more dynamic scorer, and then to get a young big, you know, like that in the future, maybe he can do something for us. So give and take, you're going to have to figure out a way to balance your roster and balance how you want to keep going forward. So, yes, we're going to evaluate all these players based on the regular season and based on the on the playoffs, and then keep growing from there.
So, Masai, Bob wanted you to take us in the office. I want you to take me to how you and Dwayne Casey will interact leading up to tip-off on Saturday. How often will you guys get together? Is it more than the regular season? Is it constant, or is it just once in a while?
You know, I honestly like to leave the players and the coaches, you know, like to do their thing. You know, like I'll sit in a little bit this morning, you know, like and talk to Casey and just go over things. If there's anything he needs from us, I'll touch base with him a little bit later in the afternoon. You know, like maybe watch if we have a walkthrough or shoot around or practice. And then sometimes at night we'll talk, you know, like we'll communicate if there's something really that, you know, like we need to talk about. But it's a time for the coaches and the players, honestly, you know, like this is their time, and sometimes they want their space, they want the way they want the way they prepare for the games. And you just let them be, and tomorrow I'm sure we'll huddle up at some point again, and then you just let him be and let the players be. You know, like it's an exciting time to just see them, you know, like go out there and perform and be themselves.
Do you find that challenging to put all this in place and then just say, okay, guys, I've set the table, do your thing?
No, you know, like I go crazy during the games, you know, like, and sometimes I'll leave the game. Sometimes I won't watch them. I won't watch the end or the second half or drive home after the first half or go to my office in the arena and do something else. You know, like that's people deal with it in different ways, and I'm weird, you know, like with dealing with it. If I'm on the road, sometimes I'll leave the opposing arena and go for a walk or something, you know, like that's how I take it in. I watch the full game afterwards and see where everything is. But no, I don't. You try not to interfere with these guys, because it's what they do. They are experts at it, and we can be coaches in our minds, you know, like, but I have to be an expert in my job, where, you know, like, it is to leave the coach and the players to do their jobs.
Kind of, you're the Billy Bean of basketball from the movie Moneyball. Billy Bean, of course, the longtime general manager of the Oakland Athletics, never watched the games, or very rarely watched the games.
Hits the gym.
Going in the gym, would have it on the radio, occasionally would look at the TV screen, but didn't really care to be there that much. And I was going to, and it fits easily with my next question, and I was going to ask you, do you get nervous before, during games, and do you get more nervous at playoff time? And I think you've already answered the question. I think the answer is, yeah, you're a pretty nervous guy.
When I say nervous too, you know, like, it's not, you know, like, I think it's, instead of nervous, sometimes it's more like I don't want to know, you know, like, yes, you know, that's more of it. So I'm not panicking, I'm not shaking, I'm not, you know, like, doing anything. Then sometimes I just don't want to know, and I'll go do something else, you know, like, I'll watch the whole game later on, you know, like,
I understand.
And assess it, yeah, but a lot of times, honestly, you know, like, it's not, I won't put it into, like, being nervous all the time, you know, like, sometimes I just walk out of the video room, or I'll walk out of the farm and, you know, like, go somewhere else, because, you know what, sometimes it's when we're up, you know, like, and I feel like a storm is coming on.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and then you just read it, man. I don't know how to explain it. Sometimes I'll text my wife and she'll go and she'll ask me, where are you? I'm at home. And she'll be like, yeah, at home, you know, like, you were just here, you know, a few minutes ago. So that's just the way it is.
But Masai, is that in part because it's out of your control at that point?
Yes.
You've kind of done what you can do?
Yes. There's nothing. I can't go trip a ref or something, you know. I can't go goaltend on their shot or something, you know.
That reminds me of in high school when I'd call a girl and leave a message. Then I couldn't do anything. I'd just pace around. Just
wait for it. Hope she called.
Freak out.
Yeah, we all went through that.
Oh, yeah. Some of us outgrew it. Some didn't.
At least they called you guys back.
At the beginning of the year, there was a lot of speculation about where this team would be. I said I thought you'd win 52 games. You fell a little short of that. Mm-hmm. But the key message, I think, both from fans and from you and Case, was we want to improve. We want to be better. And so everybody wants to put a bar someplace and say, okay, can you jump over this bar? So the first bar, I guess, was play a little bit better during the regular season, win a few more games. Well, you won one more. So that's sort of achieved. The next one is, can you get past the first round? Mm-hmm. Does success hinge upon you beating Washington?
I don't think so. You know, like, obviously, I think there will be disappointment with all of us, with everybody. Yeah, I don't want to think about it that way, you know, like, but I also look at it that it's a 4-5 matchup and it's a close one, you know, like, so we're going to go there and try. And I know these guys are fearless. I know they're going to go out and give it their all. Now, you want to measure how we perform, how we play, you know, and you can... We can actually, like, I think, evaluate from there. But really, to put a label on it and say, you know what, this is failure or this is success, I'm not going to do that. That's not how we're going to grow, I think, in this organization. We have to trend the right way and figure out what we need to do. But for now, we're going into this to go and win it, to go and try and win. You know, like, that's why we play sports and compete, and that's what we're going to try and do.
We wish you the best of luck. You open on Saturday night at home against the Wizards. Not only are we looking forward to the game, but what bag of tricks you pull out before the game this year. All the best to you. Thanks a lot for taking time for us in a busy week, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Ken. Thank you guys for having me. Thanks, Bob. Really appreciate it. The game is at 12:30, okay? 12:30 in the afternoon.
Okay, our pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks,
Masai Ujiri, the president of basketball operations and general manager. What's your expectation?
Well, I think they could beat Washington, and the grid kind of sets up nicely for them, too, if they advance. So, you know what? It's going to be, as always with the Raptors, it's going to be fun. It's going to be rocking. It's going to be the anti-Leaf atmosphere at the ACC. So if the players can channel that home court advantage, they could do some damage. And what were they, 3-0 against Washington in the regular season? So why not?
Well, look, if this team wins this series, and even better, if they win this series quickly, mm-hmm. which is not to say four games, that's an unrealistic expectation, probably. But say they win in five or even six. I believe the expectations of the fan base will have been met at that point.
Okay.
Anything over and above that will be a complete and utter bonus. I don't see any justification for railing on this team if they get past the first round but fail after that, regardless of who they play. I hope I don't have to see it, but it would be interesting to see how the fan base responds to another opening round loss. Because while Masai can talk about, as he did, about evaluating the team on a whole bunch of other levels, I think the fan base is pretty simple. They want to see something a little better. It doesn't have to be a championship. That would be great, but I don't think there's expectations of that. Doesn't even have to be a conference final. Just get past the first round.
I think Toronto Raptors fans would be extremely happy with getting past the first round.
What if they don't?
Well, then maybe
and that becomes the interesting thing. This fan base was, I think, generally appreciative that they got in the playoffs and appreciative that they battled to the very last shot against Brooklyn last year in Game 7. Last shot. That's what it came down to.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they'll be quite as forgiving.
Well, maybe we won't have to find out that answer.
Well, I hope we don't. It begins on Saturday afternoon at the Air Canada Centre. They play Game 2 at the ACC on Tuesday. Hockey talk with the head coach of the Erie Otters. He's got, well, the best player in junior hockey. The third or fourth best player in Canadian junior hockey. And the expectations are win a Memorial Cup. I'm not sure anything less than that would be acceptable in Erie. But we'll find out. Chris Knobloch will join us next when Primetime continues. This is the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before we get into some hockey talk, the National Basketball Association has announced it will begin testing players for HGH next season. Three violations will result in banishment from the league. Testing will begin next year. The players will be subject to three random unannounced tests each year, in addition to reasonable cause testing. Two of the three tests will be administered during the season. One will be done during the offseason. Players will be suspended for 20 games for a first positive, 45 games for a second positive, third violation. You're out forever. The new NBA commissioner, Adam Silver, said testing for HGH was a priority. Testing is currently being done by the National Football League and Major League Baseball. For HGH, I would feel a lot more comfortable about all of this testing if somebody did third-party independent testing instead of backroom in-house testing. You should pardon me for being a pessimist about all this, but I don't trust these leagues to police themselves.
Fair enough. Just don't have your head grow when you're the age of 29. Don't experience a growth spurt. At the age of 32, you should be fine.
Well, if your head grows, I think that's okay. The rest of you gets monstrous. I wonder if they're doing it because they have suspicion or whether they're doing it because they're just getting pressured.
I think
if you're going to do testing and you don't test for HGH, come on, what are you doing?
I would say it's probably suspicion by the statement there.
I don't know. Hockey is resuming tonight in the National Hockey League. It is ongoing in the Canadian Hockey League. The Erie Otters, the focus of just about everybody's attention these days, dismissed the London Knights in summary fashion. Four consecutive victories. They've now won, what, eight in a row?
Mm-hmm.
Lost their opening game in the playoffs, and now rattle off eight straight victories.
And get a nice long breakdown, too.
Yeah, and then they get...
Sault Ste. Marie.
Who was or was not the best team in the OHL this year.
The best. 52 wins.
According to record.
Yes.
The head coach of the Erie Otters, Chris Knobloch, is with us. Hello, Chris. How are you?
Hey, good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. You got to feel like the guy who won the lottery when you look down at your roster and you see, I got the best player in the country. I got a guy who might be the third or at worst the fourth pick in the draft this weekend. That's a pretty good way to start a team.
It is. It's for a coach, it's pretty special and entertaining. I see a lot of good hockey plays, but also some guys who can win hockey games. So for me, it's I'm enjoying it.
When you have a player of that kind of skill set, albeit these are kids, these are still young people, do you coach them less? Do you treat them differently, not out of preference, but just because you know that their skill set is different? How do you deal with it?
I think I coach my team, and each player gets a little different treatment just to how they're coached, not because of their going to the NHL next year or first overall pick or a guy who doesn't play. You just coach their personalities. And for me, sometimes it can be difficult coaching elite players because sometimes there's some arrogance, entitlement. But with the players I have, and speaking about Connor and Dylan, there's none of that. They're just good kids who love playing hockey.
Far less in Dylan's case, but certainly in Connor's case, the attention that has been cast upon him has been, I'm sure, quite extraordinary. Has it been distracting to either you or to your team at any time?
I could see it being distracting in a different circumstance, but I don't believe it has been. Just because Connor's a really popular guy on the team. Everybody knows that he's going to the NHL, and he is exceptional. And there's no nobody feels bad about it. Nobody wants him not to have that attention. So for a team, they go with it. Sometimes our bus is a little bit late after a hockey game because he's signing autographs and
sure,
little inconveniences like that. But the guys, they know what's happening right now. Connor going to be the first overall pick. And everyone's just kind of going along with the ride.
Well, Chris, Connor's going to get a lot of attention this weekend, obviously, with the draft lottery on Saturday. Will you guys watch that as a team, or is it just something you'll see in passing when you check your emails, or how do you guys look at that?
I think all the players are getting together and watching it in a spot. But yeah, everyone's very interested because they want to know where Connor's going and want to know his future. It's exciting. But for the team to do it all together, I think the coaches will be together and the players will be probably in two or three groups, but I think everyone will be paying attention.
Well, I can advise everybody that Connor won't be in one of those groups because I was I found out just late this morning that Connor McDavid will attend the draft lottery on the Rogers set on Saturday night. He will be in the studio when he finds out exactly where he ultimately will play the first of his games in the National Hockey League. So that is etched in stone. Meanwhile, your team has been marching on through the postseason. You won eight in a row. You can't be disappointed or too disappointed in the way the team has played. But the bar gets raised a little bit now. How did you play against the Sioux this year?
We split the series 1-1. We played them early in the year. I believe it was in October, but that was pre-deadline deals. Teams look quite a bit different. We saw them once after the deadline in our rink, and they beat us 6-1. So we have a lot of work to do. And we are playing well right now, but so are they. They're going on quite a roll also.
Chris, lots of talk about Connor racking up, I think it was 8 goals in the second round. Well, Nick Ritchie, I believe, got 7 for Sault Ste. Marie, and he's a big boy. Is he your number one distraction going up to Sault Ste. Marie?
Well, he's playing very well for him, but I wouldn't say he's the number one. I think there's quite a few focal points. They've got their talent spread out. Another guy on their team that's playing really well is Justin Bailey. And then their probably top line doesn't have Ritchie or Bailey on it, but McCann and Dupuis and Tolchinski, who was at the World Juniors with Russia. So we can't spend too much time trying to shut down just one guy because they've got a really deep team.
For those that don't follow the junior hockey as closely as you do, obviously, what's their skill set? Are they a high scoring team, great defensive team? Do they have great goaltending? Or do they have all of the above?
I believe they have all of the above. But if you could point out one thing that they do well is they are a lot of offense and they can skate very quickly.
I assume you've had a little time to assemble some sort of strategy. You want to share any of it with us? How do you beat these guys?
Well, you have to play really good defense. And We're missing a little bit of our decor. We've got one of our top defensemen out with a suspension for the majority of the series. But our guys will have to step up and really keep them out to the outside as much as possible.
Chris, when you're coaching guys that can range in age from 16 to 20 who want to get to that next level, and it's obviously a serious job, how do you balance that thing of letting them still be kids but at the same time making a serious on-ice product? And when I say that, I'm kind of leaning towards one of these things you guys did this year with that great suit you give out after every game. Mm. Because it looks like they're having fun. And where can I get a suit like that? And can you describe it to people who've never seen it?
Well, the suit we picked up at like a costume store. We were on a road trip in Saginaw, Michigan. And our assistant coach, Jay McKee, was the one who found it. And we decided we'd give that out to our player of the game. And I don't know, it's a little cartoonish. It's loud. It's got a lot of color. And when our player of the game walks out of the dressing room and people see him, they do see him. You cannot go unnoticed.
Would they ever give it to you?
Well, last game of the season, we divided it up. On our last game of the year, we had 50 wins. So I was fortunate enough to get the tie, and then Dylan Strome got the jacket. He had a 6-point night, who won the scoring title that night. So it got passed around.
I suggest its next stop should be the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's a wonderful suit. It would look awesome down on Yonge Street.
Let me ask you this. I don't think we need to get you to comment on Connor McDavid, because I think everybody is well aware of who he is, what his accomplishments have been, what kind of skill set he has, and we believe he has a very bright and long future as not only a player in the National Hockey League, but a star player in the NHL. Dylan Strome is a sort of a different cat, and I think there are a significant number of people who know the name but maybe don't know enough about him. Tell us what kind of player you think he is.
Well, I think he's quite a bit different than Connor. Connor brings people out of their seats, and when he has the puck, you notice him, and just I think because of his speed. Dylan's a guy that you don't really notice unless you watch him really closely. Guy who makes extremely smart decisions with the puck, sets up players. A lot of nights you will watch him and don't think he did very much, but he'll be on the score sheet with two goals, two assists. He's just an extremely smart hockey player. And he gets criticized for his skating, but as a young guy who's only 17, that comes later in time with just tall, lanky guys. They're a little bit slower to get their legs under them and become strong skaters. So when he does do that, he'll be an excellent NHL hockey player.
Does he pay a price, in your opinion, in terms of evaluating his skill set? Clearly it isn't much of a price if he's ranked fourth in the country, and that's in this draft, and that's where he's ranked. But does he pay a price because people will say, well, he plays with Connor McDavid. It makes it a lot easier for him.
Well, I don't think that has anything to do with it. They rarely see the ice together. They play the power play together. Five on five, they'll almost never be together. And he also played about 6 weeks, actually more with World Juniors, so almost 2 months without Connor even being in our lineup.
Right.
And I think that's when he played his best hockey, was when Connor wasn't there.
Interesting.
He elevated it quite a bit just because we were missing him.
Chris, what did you learn about yourself this year coaching these two young talents?
Well, I learned that it's a lot easier when you have talent.
There you go.
But, as a coach, I enjoyed it. It's you have exceptional hockey talent, but really good kids. And it can be tough coaching players because of arrogance and stuff like that. But with these two, they're just one of the guys, the popular guys, but also work hard and play the systems. And it's just really easy for me.
It's been a fun team to watch. It will continue to be. The challenge is at hand, though. Maybe the toughest challenge you will face this year with the Sioux. We wish you good luck. And thanks a lot for taking time for us tonight. We greatly appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Chris Knobloch, the head coach of the Erie Otters. Well, do you have an opinion on that series? I don't know. How closely do you follow junior hockey?
I follow the Quebec League semi-closely. I'm kind of a Halifax Mooseheads fan. But you know what's funny? When I moved to Toronto, I haven't gotten to a lot of OHL games. But when I was working out in Alberta and in Ottawa, I was at quite a large number of WHL games and OHL games, but I guess I'm just like every other Torontonian. Don't go to OHL games, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that most hockey fans are rooting for Erie, not to the point where they would like go to games or travel or whatever, but because McDavid's stature is so high, it's just natural, I think, to hope that he makes it to the Memorial Cup.
So you can see him on the big stage. He's not going to be playing any junior hockey after this year, so might as well see him go out in style, right?
Well, and I know he's been on this network numerous times this year, seemingly every week.
Hey, he's good TV.
I get that.
5 goals he had in one game already in the playoffs. It was ludicrous. Ludicrous.
Well, we know the kid can play. I think everybody is kind of rooting for Erie. Not because they care about Erie so much. They care about Connor McDavid, and they want a chance to see him play for as long as they can.
And
before he gets to the NHL.
And people always love to say that they saw something special, right? If you can see this kid go all the way this year, that's a pretty cool thing.
Well, he's gone about as far as he can go in terms of stature. There's just no question anymore. There was a question at the beginning of the year. I just don't think there's any question right now he's going to be the number one draft choice.
Oh, no, and you're right. There was a debate at the start of the year.
Yeah. Well, they open their series against the Sioux.
In a week. They get a nice long time off.
And the number one draft choice will be at the draft Saturday night on CBC, I believe.
Yes, sir. Draft Lotto, CBC.
Our thanks to Chris Knobloch and to Masai Ujiri for joining us. Roundtable comes tomorrow, as always. Have a nice evening. Good night from Toronto.